This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. With the New World Report, my colleagues Joseph Umeyer, Executive Director of Secure Free Society, and Ernesto Araújo, former Foreign Minister of the Republic of Brazil, looking at the changing landscape in the Americas with the expectation that Mr. Trump is going to do completely new things that can and cannot inhibit growth in Latin America. Joseph, I come to you because the border is always in question now, not only the Mexican-American border, but the Canadian-American border. Two headlines in particular. Migrant arrests at U.S. borders with Mexico and Canada fell in November, according to a senior Biden official. And then from Ottawa, Canada pulls refugee welcome mat, launches ads warning asylum claims hard. Once presenting itself as one of the world's most welcoming countries to refugees and immigrants, Canada is launching a global online ad campaign cautioning asylum seekers that making a claim is hard. I know, Joseph, that over these last days we've had a report of a phone call between President-elect Trump and President Sheinbaum of Mexico, and a visit at Mar-a-Lago by Prime Minister Trudeau to President-elect Trump, and we can presume that migration was part of the story. However, this phone call has been interpreted differently by the two presidents. Mr. Trump said, great phone call. Ms. Sheinbaum said, people are free to come and go. We're not going to stop them and our borders are open. How do you interpret these simultaneous phone calls along with the visit of Mr. Trudeau? It certainly looks like North America is having a conversation about the overwhelming migration. Good evening to you, Joseph.
Good evening, John. And, you know, this is what, you know, many people are calling now the Trump effect. Is there's many things that the world leaders are now recalculating based on the victory of President Donald Trump in his ascension back into the White House, even before Inauguration Day. So you don't have to wait till January 20th of next year before you start seeing world leaders make moves. And in that, you know, one of the things that President Trump won on, and, you know, part of his mandate, is the border, and the border specifically when it turns to migration and when it turns to fentanyl. And President Trump had made a promise to the American electorate that he would close the border on day one, and I believe he's getting to work on that. So the idea of imposing tariffs on two of the United States' largest trade partners is high leverage that the United States, that President Trump, I think, is looking to engage. He set a 25% tariffs to Canada and Mexico. And I think the intention was to get their attention, and it for certain did. Now, the reaction from both the president of Mexico and the prime minister of Canada was very different. And I think that in this case, the Mexican president actually overplayed her hand a bit. And I think the Canada premier did a little bit better at how his reaction was. And the distinction is this. On the behalf of Mexico, the Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, who's a newly inaugurated president of Mexico, sent a very long, very wordy letter to President Trump and also read the letter on national TV in Mexico, where she basically outlined her positions and talked about how, you know, beyond just the migration, there's issues of arms trafficking going into Mexico. There's issues of drug demand on the side of the United States, and basically a laundry list of ideas. This was a bad move. It was a bad move because you don't want to get into the negotiation, which is inevitable, going to happen, with all your cards showing on the table. And I believe that that's what she did. And not only showing the cards to the United States or to President Trump himself, but showing it to the entire world with his very publicized letter. In fact, her predecessor, President López Obrador, now former President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, actually criticized her for doing this and said that this is not the way to handle that relationship. Different to that, the prime minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, didn't write any letters, didn't make any tweets, didn't do any public show. In fact, he went to go visit President Trump in Mar-a-Lago. I thought that would have been much smarter for the Mexican president to do, is because what you want to do is you want to have a face-to-face. You want to be able to talk to President Trump directly. Obviously, by him making that statement about the 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico, he's in some ways inviting you to have a conversation even before the election. I'm sorry, even before the inauguration. And I think that Justin Trudeau took that as an invitation and went to Mar-a-Lago over the Thanksgiving break. And you know, we don't know the contents of the meeting, but we know that they had a what seemed to be a productive conversation, at least based on what both President Trump and Justin Trudeau tweeted after the event. So to me, this is a high stakes negotiation. This is President Trump delivering on his promise to curb the fentanyl and to slow the migration. And that begins by closing the border. I don't believe he was joking. I think on January 20th, immediately after he's inaugurated as president, after he swears in on the Bible, I think he's going to close the border because there's many things that are really disturbing Americans today. But among those is the unfettered migration, the massive amounts of drugs that are coming into our country, and the gangs and the criminal elements that are following them. And so I think that he's going to do that. And I think that the president of Mexico and Canada are getting ready for that as well.
Joseph, I want to mention the border not only involves large numbers, whether they drop month to month or not, but also gangsters. There is a very unhappy story in New York right now about a Tren Aragua member who's been arrested many times and never jailed in New York City. Never jailed, if I read all of this correctly. It's featured in the New York papers. Is this something that the president has also mentioned in specific, the Venezuela gangs? I know his border czar has said, I'm going to go after the criminals first. But Tren Aragua, they're criminals whether they're in the courtroom or not. So do you have expectation that they're going to be able to deal with the gangs, the cartels, not just the fentanyl?
No, it is. It is a big problem. Actually, John, this week, or maybe it might be next week, I'm not sure, I have a major report going to be published by the Heritage Foundation called Derailing the Tren de Aragua. And what this report focuses on is on three things. First, it focuses on making a very strong argument that this Venezuelan mega gang is state-sponsored. So as opposed to MS-13 and the Mexican cartels and other transnational criminal organizations that have wreaked havoc on the United States, this one has state sponsorship, which makes them that much more dangerous. And so I make that point very clear inside the paper. The second point that I make is that they have a bit of an ideology associated to them. That's different also than most transnational criminal organizations. They're only worried about profit. And their ideology has to deal with what's called invasions. It's assaults and attacks on private property, whether those are residences, whether they're abandoned buildings, whether those are luxury items. They have a very strong impetus to go after private property because it kind of falls into this ideological invasion mentality that they have in Venezuela. In fact, most people from Venezuela, if you talk to them about Tren de Aragua, they're going to talk to you about invasiones because they're known for that. And then the final point that I make in the paper, and I think this is really the recommendation, is that you know, the Tren de Aragua is a multidimensional problem. They're building alliances with many transnational criminal organizations throughout Latin America, including the PCC from Brazil, including the Mexican cartels. And so I believe that the United States has to create a combined joint interagency task force to tackle transnational criminal organizations that are threatening American sovereignty. Tren de Aragua is probably top on the list of the groups, along with the Mexican cartels and others that are involved in that. And I think and by doing that, we can tackle the Tren de Aragua, not just from within our borders, which we obviously have to do. We have to deport them from the country, but to tackle them from the entire hemisphere and to be able to dismantle this group from all the countries in the Western Hemisphere to make sure that it doesn't exist. This is similar, I'd say, in intensity to what the first Trump administration back in 2017 did as a counter-ISIS campaign and was able to dismantle ISIS within a year, and actually probably within even less than that, by making effective actions both in the United States and internationally. And I think that template, that kind of initiative can be replicated, but this time targeted at this Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua, which is very, very dangerous.
Ernesto, a very good evening to you. Brazil, one story from last week where I do not have a fresh headline, and then another story that's very fresh about BRICS. First, Bolsonaro, the former president, has been accused and I believe detained, but he was under his own cognizance because there was no indictment, for being part of a conspiracy not only to dislodge Lula da Silva, who was elected president, but also I believe there was talk of assassination. I wanted to know if there was any change in status of those allegations because the prosecutor had delayed the indictment until the new year. The second part has to do with BRICS, very immediate, much more significant, because Mr. Trump, President-elect Trump, has said, if there's any movement by BRICS to form a separate world currency, I will impose 100% tariffs or something even more severe on their imports. That would damage Brazil. Just the talk of it is going to damage Brazil. First of all, can you update me on Bolsonaro and then this BRICS threat? Good evening to you, Ernesto.
Sure, John. Good evening. On the indictment telenovela or soap opera. So prosecutor's office just formed a special task force with the chief prosecutor at its head to examine the 800-page report that was released last week by the federal police. So it's up to the prosecutors to bring formal charges against Bolsonaro or whoever is mentioned in that report. They didn't say how long they will take with this task force, but now we are approaching Christmas season, etc. So also the main tribunals go into vacation. They have long vacations here in Brazil. What happens is the following, that there's all sorts of political movements going back and forth, because this is a political process, not a judicial process. So all commentators say that former President Bolsonaro is trying to put all the blame that is sure coming into his military aides, saying, oh, whatever they planned, I didn't know about it. I was not part of that. I didn't agree with whatever was planned. He has some elements in the leaks that came from the report where the some military aides say, we want to take action without specifying what, but the guy, Bolsonaro, doesn't want to sign the documents that are required. He has one of them implies Bolsonaro was a coward for not wanting to go ahead with something planned. So Bolsonaro might have a case there, but speculation is the and the military aides include people who were at ministerial level, include his running mate for president, candidate for vice president. They could, okay, so Bolsonaro wants to throw us under the bus. So we're going to make some revelations about things that are not yet in the report. So basically now it's that game. Unfortunately, as I said, it's politicized. It's based on this tug of war for power. I hope some truth may come if people are culprits for planning assassinations. Of course, that's a crime. On the other hand, if Bolsonaro was considering issuing a decree for the declaration of the state of siege, well, this is not a crime. They consider this a coup d'état, okay? So that's it.
About the BRICS, about the threat.
As for the BRICS, yes, very important. So, Brazil is... under Lula is heavily committed to BRICS and heavily committed to the idea of an alternative world currency. Yesterday, there was this interview by Sergei Lavrov of Russia saying, this alternative currency is Brazil's idea, is Lula's idea. So that's much for friendship with Lavrov, right? So apparently the Russians are pointing that, Brazil, it's their idea. So... this would be totally destructive to the Brazilian economy in a moment that it's very much going south. I mean, in terms of exchange rate, inflation, everything is worse and worse. So to lose basically what would happen, the American market would be right. Would be terrible.
Any reaction today after Trump said as much? We have about a minute. Has there been has there been any reaction in the Brazilian markets?
Yeah, no. Brazilian markets, they are already, were already very, very much under pressure. Everything is going from worse to worse, as I said. So no official reaction. What people are saying, starting to say, this would destroy the U.S. economy as well, thinking not only of Brazil, but China, India, etc. I don't know. But in Brazil, this is only adds to an atmosphere, a business atmosphere, that is the worst we had in 20 years, I think.
Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil. Joseph Omar, the executive director of Secure Free Society. When we come back, the bad boys of Latin America. That it would be Caracas and Havana.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.